This is Real Estate Journeys, episode 99.
Welcome to Real Estate Journeys, here to help you build your cash-flowing real estate empire that you've been dreaming of. This is about real estate investors who have escaped the soul-crushing 9-to-5 rat race by taking action, leveraging relationships, and gaining the financial independence. It's time to stop making excuses and get the insight and knowledge you need to become a successful real estate investor. This is your host, Matthew Baltzell.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, aka Matthew Baltzell. Welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for real estate investors looking to scale to 100 units and live that location-independent lifestyle. And guys, since we are speaking internationally, I'm coming at you live from Thailand. The couple that were married couple, I should say, that we are going to talk to today is coming live from Canada. Their name is Kyle Dooland and Janie Grenier. Did I say that correct?
Yes, you did.
All right. Yes. I'm like, oh God, I'm like that American is just like going to butcher the name. So I'm glad I got that, guys. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's going
to
be awesome.
Glad to have you guys
as
on.
As much value as we can.
Yeah, for sure. So for people that are listening to this, they are actually, like I said, they're located in Canada, but they do most of their investing in the United States, and they're looking to be getting a investment visa to be living. Are you guys going to be moving to America, or are you just looking to...
That's the plan.
Okay, so there we go. So they're looking to get the investment visa and live in America permanently. So with that said, could you give us a little bit about your background, how you guys got involved in real estate? Why did you start saying we're going to go to America invest? Why not Canada? Give us a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And the TLDR on it is because of her. Janie is a spark. She's a visionary. She knew since she was about this tall that she wanted to do real estate investing, and she knew that that was going to be her pathway to wealth and to financial independence. And so when she was, I think, four or five years old, you said?
No, about eight.
Eight?
8 years old.
You were having dreams of owning real estate.
Owning the island of Montreal.
Oh, wow. Not just real estate. The whole island. There you go.
And there were no people on the island.
No, there was no people on the island. There was just money in the buildings. That's all I remember.
I love where this is going. No tenants, nothing. I'm just going to own it. Just how my journey got going.
Yeah, exactly.
8-year-old mind. Yeah.
So the concept of equity was already very ingrained in Jamie.
Yeah.
And it's actually really funny because a little under 3 years ago when we started doing short-term rentals, that just became even more true because there are no tenants. Mm-hmm. We just have guests. And Montreal is one of our playgrounds as well. So it just, it kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy of some sort. So that was really interesting.
But why the U.S. and why all of this? Basically, I started investing 13 years ago. I was pretty young. We don't come from a family of means, but I knew from a young age that time, interest, really make things happen, right? So that's how you create diamonds, basically time and pressure. And so at 18, I started investing in a vehicle in Canada called RSPs. The equivalent in the US is IRA. And then I bought my first property. I was 19 going on 20 here in Canada. Bought my second at 24, my third at 27 in Canada. And eventually, that's something that I wanted to do. And my plan originally was to buy one property every 5 years and retire at 50, sell off the first property that by then would have been paid off, and buy myself an RV, travel the world, live off the cash flow. And being part of a few real estate groups in the Montreal market, we basically came into contact with someone who was investing in the US as a Canadian, and we decided to jump in, and he became our first mentor. And so we decided to jump into the US for the opportunities that we saw. And from there, that was about 6 years ago, and we never looked back. We haven't bought in Canada since.
Now, when you met this mentor, did he help you pick target markets, or did you already have one selected, or where did you really start investing, or did you just kind of like go where he was going?
Right. He was one of those gurus, a Canadian guru investing in the US. So he gave us a lot of knowledge, but no, he did not tell us where to go or what market to pick. That was about a year of investigation on our part and learning which states were the most landlord friendly, where we didn't start with that much money. So where can we get more bang for a buck? Where can we get the most returns on our investments? And basically that was where we started.
Yeah, and where we can recycle our capital as well, right. Because it's one thing to invest all your money into a 20 cap property, but if you can't pull it back out, well, yeah. You did one great investment, but we wanted to do much more than that.
Right. Very true. And so you guys are at this point when you're with the mentor, where are you in Canada? Where are you located at this time?
Well,
that is the question.
We're quite nomad.
Yeah, okay.
So basically we're between Ottawa and Montreal for okay. some parts of the time. Yeah. And then we're in the US about 6 months a year. And then we usually try to take 2 to 3 months somewhere in the world.
Hey,
so we're actually going to Thailand for almost 3 months next.
I love it. I love it.
2 weeks. Yeah.
We're going to get a beer. We're going to get a beer together. So
that would be great.
Absolutely.
So cool. So I think it's very important. So people that are listening to this, you know, they're trying to scale up. They're thinking of, you know, maybe they live in California or a more expensive market. They want to go into a different state. You're obviously doing it from a different country. I know people say landlord friendly states, but can you speak to what states you kind of targeted, what you liked about them, and a little bit more about what a landlord friendly state it is and how it's applicable to you guys?
Sure. So as we did our due diligence on the different states, we came across Ohio as being the first state that we invested in. And so Ohio is easy for the landlords. Basically, it's easy to evict a tenant if that needs to be done. So we really enjoy that. Back home in Quebec and in Ontario, it's very difficult. They have boards, like they have landlord boards. And some tenants are, what's the word? They're
professional squatters,
right? And it's extremely difficult to get them out of your unit. So in Ohio, that's not the case. That's not an issue at all.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that we enjoyed very much. As we were looking for different markets as well, we wanted a strong rental market. Ohio has a strong rental market. There's a lot of need for tenants who are looking for places to live, basically. So there's that we enjoyed very much. It's not too far from home, and the returns are just phenomenal. Properties are cheap and rents are high. So, you know, if you make the math, you can get really good cap rates.
And how did you go about financing these once you started investing in America?
So the very, very first property that we purchased was a cash deal. And this was very, very cheap. So our first property we bought for $9,000.
$9,000.
Okay. A single family home, 3 bedrooms, 1.5 bath, 1,800 plus square foot.
Mm-hmm.
And we put in $30,000 to renovate it. When we were done, we were all in $39,000, went to the bank, refinanced. It appraised for basically $70,000. So at the refinance, 70% loan to value, we cashed out all our money. So we had a free property 3 months later, rented it out at $1,200 a month, cash flowed $350. And, that's how we got started. We cashed it out. We did it again. And ever since then, prices have been climbing in that market. So now the average property purchased that needs some work is probably about $40,000.
Mm.
So, you know, it's slowly creeping up year by year.
And that's in Ohio, correct?
That's right.
What city is that?
We're in the suburbs of Cleveland.
Suburbs of Cleveland. Okay, very cool. So you're building up this portfolio. You guys are doing well. You're, in a sense, doing the BRRRR strategy. And then we spoke prior on the call that you guys have been getting into mobile home parks. You've been getting into short-term rentals. How did you decide to open up and expand your horizons and, first off, go to mobile homes? And then you can't see this, but Kyle's pointing. He's like, I follow. How did you go about deciding to expand into mobile home parks and getting into short-term rentals?
So we started with single family homes, then went into the small multifamilies and a little larger multifamilies. And then we decided, our mentor was big on mobile home parks. So we decided to explore that market, and we fell in love with mobile home parks, the opportunity that's available out there. And also the cash flow, the returns on investment, and how creative you can be in that space. So we really enjoyed that. And also we think it's a great strategy for risk mitigation if it comes to, you know, having a downturn in the market, which, well, everybody, I think, predicts it at some point in the future. So that's how we basically progressed. It was just natural for us to put in a lot of efforts into first the single family home, really learning that asset class, the 1 to 4 units, putting time for, you know, to develop the systems and the teams, and then grow from there. So the smaller apartment buildings, and then mobile home parks was the natural progression. And
these are mobile home parks in America, correct?
That's right.
That's
so most of our parks are in Michigan at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, we have offers across primarily in the Midwest, but across the U.S. We've got offers on nearly 100 parks. We're very, very patient, and our posture is extremely important. So when a great deal comes our way and we can create a great solution for the particular seller, that's when we put all our weight on the gas pedal and move forward.
Mm-hmm. And then you also said that you were diving into short-term rentals. Is that correct?
That's correct. So we started about 3 years ago, and it started just because we were going to the US for an extended period of time, and we didn't want our apartment to sit empty and having to pay for it. So we started Airbnb, but then eventually we took a course, and you had that mentor on your podcast, so Brian Page. And that
we can shout him out.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Page was there, and we took his first BNB course about 3 years ago. So I think we were one of his first students. And of course, from there, we took what he taught and we just grew on it and built our own systems and our own teams and processes. But he started us off. And so from there, we built a company about 2.5 years ago that now manages about 50 units of short-term rentals across Canada and the US.
Mm, I love it. And I know he did some traveling as well. And he says, you know, he's not trying to be a landlord. He's trying to set it up and be all automated. And is yours, I'm assuming yours is just as automated as his is. You have you're not going in, cleaning the units. You might have done that at first. Wow, that's great. How did you scale that? I mean, like, I know you took the course, but can you give the listeners a little bit about, like, what's the biggest things that you learned? And, like was it obviously a lot more difficult than you anticipated, correct?
It's a good question. No.
No,
because
we're I love Kyle. Well, I love Kyle. He's like,
Well, we already had over 100 units under our belt as landlords, right? So we understood that part. We also have a lot of friends in the space that are landlords. So what Brian taught us in the very beginning was the arbitrage model, where you go out, you find yourself a lease, you sign a lease as this company coming in, and you basically tell the landlord that you're going to be doing short-term rentals, and then you make the difference between what you made with the short-term rentals and what you pay in your lease. Mm-hmm. And that was okay to get started, but then we quickly realized that we didn't want to have 100 leases on our backs and have to be responsible for, you know, that much leases, basically. So we decided to do...
And 100 set of furniture.
And 100 set of furniture.
100 sets of furniture.
You need a warehouse.
And so instead, we decided to partner with investors, and we become what we call a co-host. And we basically became a management company for short-term rentals instead. So these are investors that they basically take a big piece of the pie. We charge a percentage management fee, and they get the upside with us. So it's not just charging lease. They really get the best of the best in terms of cash flow.
So you partner with the actual property owner, or you partner with another investor?
Yeah, well, the investor, if they're the property owner, but basically the property owner, they're the ones who actually furnish the units.
Okay.
And then we charge a management fee, and they get what we like to say is, we like to tell them that they should be making 30 to 50% more net than what they would with a long-term tenant. And that includes their fees.
Mm, very good. And these properties are located in the US as well?
Yep. Yeah. Cleveland, Ohio being one of them.
And then do you do the short-term rentals in Canada as well, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So quick history on that. So we started from Canada, and the story goes that as a Canadian in the US, we're allowed to be in your country. Soon it'll be our country, but in your country 6 months a year. And it's a little more complicated than that. It's between 4 to 6 months if you're a regular visitor as a tourist.
Yeah.
And so that limited us, because we enjoy the US just as a place, and we enjoy the investing opportunities and the people we've met and everything. Mm-hmm. We enjoy it very much. So we usually tap out our time. But then when we're back in Canada, although we continue to grow the business remotely, it's not the same feeling. We don't enjoy it as much. And so we said, okay, well, what are we really going to do with our time if we're not going so full force on the US investing? What are we going to do? And then we had a friend who'd been following us for a couple of years, and he'd been seeing the success we've been having. He wanted to be part of this world of entrepreneurship and real estate investing. And I said, well, what's stopping you? Well, excuse. Well, okay, stop with the excuse. What if we helped you? What if we partnered with you and we developed this company together, equal parts? And that's how STR Properties was born, which is our short-term rental management company. And so for basically 6 months a year, we've been developing that in Canada, starting with Ottawa, Canada's capital, mm-hmm. building our teams and our systems and our marketing and just our speech patterns around that business. And then from there, we started developing the neighboring suburbs, the neighboring cities, and discovering the teams and the cornerstones that you need to branch off and develop new cities. Like, what are the main obstacles and what do you need to put in place so that that scaling process is as smooth as possible? Mm-hmm. And so we did that. We hopped around. We ended up launching 7 Canadian cities that way in proximity, basically along the Ottawa-Montreal corridor. 7 cities on that corridor. And last summer, we hopped the border, and now we're developing Cleveland, Ohio, where we hold a lot of long-term rentals as our first short-term U.S. rental market. And then next year in 2020, it's going to be Cleveland 100% short-term rentals and Cleveland 100%.
Why Cleveland per se? Because as I'm thinking about this, you know, we're talking about landlord-friendly, and then I know obviously Cleveland is, but you know, if they're short-term, right, they're probably going to stay 2, 3, 4 nights. Hopefully, they're not going to stay for, like, God's on end. And not, you have to kick them out, right? So does that really – is that really applicable if you're looking for landlord-friendly states for short-term rentals as well?
Probably not as much. But the reason why we're doing Cleveland, Ohio is, first of all, we have long-term holdings there. We mm-hmm. have a lot of friends, you know, that are investors, that are landlords, that are looking to get – more money, right, in terms of cash flow. So it's easy for us to come in as the management company and say, okay, well, now, you know, we'll take over and we'll put in guests instead of tenants. So the transition is very natural for us. Mm-hmm. The other thing too is that Cleveland, Ohio, and its suburbs, properties are decently priced, right? So mm-hmm. what we like and what we teach is basically, if you buy a property and it can cash flow well with a long-term tenant, then ride the wave, the Airbnb wave. We don't know how long that's going to last, but while it's up and blooming and it's, you know, everything is lovely, well, we're making a lot of cash flow. But if ever that wave decides to dissipate, we can always revert back to a long-term tenant and also still make cash flow. So it's a market that's great for both. So that's why we really enjoyed Cleveland.
Yeah. And a lot of people think Cleveland, like, who wants to visit Cleveland? Who goes to Cleveland? It's not like California or Florida or all these places. Well, that's true. And yet it's not just for vacation that people travel. You know, Cleveland, Ohio is the medical and rock and roll capital of the world. They've got 3 major sports teams, the Browns, the Cavaliers, the Indians, which draws in major crowds. It's got a casino right in its downtown core. And the Cleveland Clinic, have you heard of that? Of course you have. It's national. And Cleveland, well, that's the hub. I mean, it's the number one employer of the city. And so that brings in researchers, medical professionals, and so forth, but also patients who have this really terrible and rare disease, and they're in Florida, but they're coming to Cleveland for their treatments. Mm-hmm. So it's just bringing a lot of influx, a lot of coming and going out of the city.
So you've identified the market. It sounds good. How do you go about identifying the property? Are you investing or doing short-term rentals for houses? Are you doing it for, I know Brian's had, like, students that have done it for mansions. People do studios, condos. What is your niche in particular, or what are you noticing that's a good investment for Airbnb?
We like what we can control as much as possible. So a single family home is beautiful. A duplex where we have both sides is beautiful. A quadplex where we have all 4 units is beautiful. We like to mitigate as much as possible because sometimes neighbors don't like the fact that there's people coming and going. So if we can mitigate that right out the gate, it's better. We much prefer that. So, and then Janie touched on the second point is, will it cash flow nicely even if we have to reconvert it back to long-term tenants? And what we consider as a nice cash flow is a 10 cap. So even with long-term tenants, if we're right around a 10 cap, we're happy, because on short-term rentals, we can really blow that out of the water.
So single family homes, condo is fine, up to a 4 unit if we can get all 4 units. No mansions in Cleveland.
Not that there aren't any.
No, it's not really the business model. I don't think that we'll have enough people coming and paying that high amount. So basically, it's budget friendly. So we optimize prices as much as we can, and our occupancy rate is really high. We're around the 90-92% range throughout the year, and we're offering people budget-friendly accommodations. So that's really our niche market.
Okay, so now we know the type of properties. So how do you reach out to these landlords or the property owners? Are you spamming them with emails? Are you sending them flyers? Are you going door to door? Are you putting on the Canadian charm? Like, I walked all the way here. Like, we drove our bus from two cities. We're like, saw you. Like, hey, how do you go about reaching out to the landlord?
Well, speaking of buses, I mean, we actually host what we call JK's Epic Bus Tour. And that's where we bring out-of-state investors to Cleveland to show them the city, the opportunities, and they're investors. So they're going to be buying investment properties. And obviously, we're going to say, hey, have you considered short-term rentals? So that's one way.
And we show them a pilot. Basically, what does a short-term rental look like in this market? So, yeah, so that's cool. And like Kyle said, we do bring people to us. But we're also part of a lot of network groups in Cleveland. We've been part of the community for about 6 years now. So we've, you know, organically just been fostering a lot of relationships and following up with, you know, a bunch of people in Cleveland, a lot of landlords, going for lunch and telling them what we're doing. And they've been seeing the progress. So it's just natural. We're not spamming anyone as is right now.
No. So yes, so far it's been primarily networking and word of mouth. In terms of spamming, we just started doing a little bit of spamming, and here's how we do it. Basically, we have guests that come to our units, and most people, the large majority, I mean, we're super hosts, so we get 5 stars most of the time. They love the stay. And so we just started basically sending little messages back to our guests and saying, hey, while you're away, you probably have a house that's empty. Have you considered short-term renting your primary residence while you're on vacation? We can help you pay for your rent or your mortgage and pay for your next vacation just by the fact that you're not at home. So we just tried this. It's in beta trial runs. We'll see where it goes, but this is literally in the last month.
It sounds like a very warm lead. That's it's very entrepreneurial of you, Kyle.
We try.
Yeah, very cool. And so is there anything that you've been noticing as far as trends, we'll just say in the Ohio area, from as far as tenants are concerned that are coming in? Like, man, people really love to have a pool. People really love to have be close to a gym. They like to have fireplaces. Is there anything that you notice that that you guys try and always strive for in your properties?
Well, we have 5 major pockets that we target. So there's 5 major basically pockets. Mostly they're close to downtown and close to attraction. So for sure, we try to get properties that are close to what people want. We're not going to be doing short-term rental in a D-class neighborhood, even a C-class neighborhood, you know, because we just want our guests to feel safe. Not that, you know, yeah, so we won't buy and we won't do short-term rentals in those rougher areas. But in terms of amenities, not really. A lot of people like to be by the lake, so that's one. And so those pockets are usually nearby the lake, or it's a quick drive. And yeah, no, just major attractions, really.
No, I think just the standard staples of what a short-term rental should be, just, you know, clean, uncluttered. I think those are the more important things. I mean, you know, and Brian Page just mentions this too, like Netflix and having a smart TV is always a really big plus. In fact, we got a complaint because in one of our properties, there's no TV in the main living room. I mean, we don't even own a TV. We can't afford it. You know how much time that costs? Yeah. So, but we do have a smart TV in each room in that particular house. And we got a couple complaints now that there wasn't a TV in the living room. I'm like, no, that's a plus.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't have a TV as well.
One thing that really stands out is I'm a professional designer. And so I have tricks of really enhancing the space to make it look really nice. So of course, as you know, the only thing that people see, the first thing they see are pictures. So professional pictures is yes, for sure, and that's needed. But also a nice professionally designed property, which is basically my specialty. So I don't go out and spend a lot of money. I have tricks to do that on a budget, but people like that very much and it attracts people. So that's a plus that we
offer. Can you share with us one trick?
Yeah, sure. Just in the back here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see, but basically just, you know, buying wall art on, you know, on like Amazon, and there's different sites. So like, instead of paying $100 per wall art, like I buy big stuff for $25, I mean, it's hard to say over a microphone, but I mean, there's tricks out there, just to make the space look comfortable and clean and professionally designed.
How about the curtains?
Curtains, okay. One trick. You want to make sure that your curtains aren't always at the ceiling level. So
floor
to ceiling level. You want, because that will open up your space very much. A lot of people put like a 7-foot curtain if it's an 8-foot ceiling, and they'll put the 7-foot curtain like just above the windowsill. Mm-hmm. That really shrinks your space. Don't do that, guys. Just put it at the top and take an 8-foot curtain and open up your space. That's real nice.
All right. Noted. All right. Last question, and then we'll wrap it up with the closing questions. Have you had any horror stories as far as Airbnb is concerned? You know, people read about these, they see them on whatever, CNN, a quick show, or nightly news, and might deter people from jumping into the Airbnb space. Have you run into anything like that?
We've had a few, very little though. We've been lucky and we've hosted thousands of people. Let's see. I guess the worst one that we had was not too long ago.
But we don't call it horror stories. We call them opportunity stories.
Learning experience.
And here's why. Are you thinking about the Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Orleans. So we have this property in a suburb of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And we had just onboarded it about a month prior to this story happening. And, you know, the owner was a little bit hesitant, but, you know, we sold it. You know, we're going to make him more money. Everyone talks money, so then it was fine. And then we get a call, and there's, like, those police at the property, and there was a shooting. Okay, well, wonderful. First question, obviously, is anybody hurt? No. It was just the house was shot up. I think it ended up being 3 or 4 bullets hit the house.
From the street, someone shoot at the house.
Yeah. We don't know the story or anything. We don't know. But what ended up happening was actually nice because we were Airbnb and because we know how to handle incidents and whatnot, the entire situation was handled in under 5 days. Airbnb paid for the lost booking that we had to relocate. They paid for all the damages. They even, one of the bullets in particular, and this is not to scare, but it's to show the systems, and if you're dealing with a professional host, how this can completely mitigate the risk involved. So one of the particular bullets shot right beside the door, through a wall, into one of the...
A glass sliding mirror.
Shattered that mirror, went through the wall behind that, and into the back of the fridge. So just that bullet, you know, cost...
One bullet.
Yeah, one bullet cost like $3,000 worth of damage because of the stainless steel fridge.
Yeah.
But regardless, we got everything reimbursed by Airbnb and by the guests just by following the appropriate channels and knowing how to deal with the situation. Mm. And we took the opportunity to actually do a little revamping of the unit while we were there. And we actually made the unit even better than it was prior to the shooting to the owner and our satisfaction, obviously.
Yeah, no more bullets and fridges.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But it's rare. So, I mean, for people that are scared, it can happen. But, I mean, we've hosted thousands of people and that was one incident. Other than that, there's about a handful of other incidences that are not as bad as that. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not that bad.
You live and you learn. Sounds like you guys are off to the right path. All right, well, I want to close it out with 3 closing questions. First question is, what is a pain point or weakness you face right now in your business?
For us, well, I guess it's being Canadian, investing in the US and not being able to be in the US for, you know, extended period of time. So really for us, it's getting that visa completed that we're going to be doing after we come back from Thailand in April, and then waiting and hopefully being approved for the investor visa. So that's a biggest pain point for us. And then
maybe I was going to say, did you finish your idea?
Sure.
Okay. So on my side, I guess my biggest pain point is that we actually have more than one business and we're all things considered new. It's only been 6 years that we're basically entrepreneuring full-time hours. And we have 3 major companies and underneath those there's holding companies. So we've got a lot going on. And it's just a matter of finding that sweet transition of how do you find the right employees, the right VAs, and just How do you build that team? We're growing so fast, and it takes time, and you have to be very careful with who you bring on board at the right time for the right amounts and so forth. So that's just something we haven't exactly found yet. I don't think our team is growing as quickly as we are. And so that's just something to be cognizant of and that we're going to be working for in 2020, which is part of the reason that we're as well going to Cleveland, and we're going to be there to grow some teams physically. Growing teams remotely and in person are different challenges.
Yeah, very true. I mean, if you get the right people, you know, you'll definitely be able to scale up faster. They always say the old adage, hire slow, fire quick, right? So you get the right people in place and you guys will be off to the races. Very cool.
That's it.
Second question is, what is your favorite book to regift?
One that we really like is, it's called The Happiness Advantage, and the author is Sean Ecker. And the reason why we like that book is because a lot of times people think that to be happy, you have to attain a certain level. You have to, like, I'll be happy when I get the next raise. I'll be happy when, but really it's all the opposite. You know, be happy today with what you have, learn to appreciate what you have. And as you're happy and the more you're fulfilled and the more you appreciate what you have now, it's just going to allow you to grow. And mindset is very, very important. And so a lot of people think the opposite, that, you know, and so The Happiness Advantage really brings that home.
Yeah. The common knowledge is that success breeds happiness, but actually it's the opposite, that happiness breeds success.
That's right.
And The Happiness Advantage gives you some practical steps to take to reach happiness now and to position yourself for success through those strategies.
Love it.
All right. And it's a super simple read.
Yeah. Sounds good. I'm going to have to check that out. All right. Third one is, if you were to live abroad for 1 year, one whole year, not, can't be the US, all right? Where would you live?
That is abroad.
Yeah, where would you live and why?
That's a really good question. I love traveling, and we've been doing a lot more of it in the last 5 years because we've built, you know, remote businesses. But there's one place I haven't been, but it's, I think I would love to live there for a year, and it's South America. I'm not sure exactly where in South America right now. I haven't done too much due diligence, but essentially we'd love to learn Spanish. And so if we can submerge ourselves in a Spanish culture, that's something that I really, really like to do.
Does that go for you, Kyle, or do you want to live, you want to live somewhere else?
I live where Janie lives, and that's what makes me happy. I'm happy as a clam.
Spoken like a true good husband.
Yeah.
Happy wife, happy life. You know, we learn quick. We learn quick.
Yes, my love. We do. It's only been 4 months now. Three. Wow.
There you go.
So we're usually married, but we've been together longer.
Yeah.
Very cool, guys. What's the best way for people that are listening to this to get a hold of you guys and learn more about you?
Very good. By email, info@nowfortomorrow.club. Our website, nowfortomorrow.club. So that's so that's the easiest way to get a hold of us.
If you're specifically, if whoever's listening is specifically interested in the short-term rental side, our website is str-properties.com, and we actually have, I don't know when you're going to publish this this particular
episode,
broadcast podcast, but we have a free webinar that's coming up in about 2 weeks. And it's nowfortomorrow.club/freedom, specifically, nowfortomorrow.club/freedom. And this is where it's just a very quick overview on how you as a homeowner can start tapping into short-term rentals to pay for your mortgage, your rent, or your next vacation.
Awesome. Very cool. I'll make sure to include that in the show notes. Kyle, Janie, much love. I appreciate it. I'm sure I'll see you in Thailand. Have a good one, guys.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I hope you guys got some tremendous value there from it. But if you guys are looking to take your real estate career to the next level and looking to partner with us on your next real estate deal, please head on over to www.matthewbaltzell.com and sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get our latest deal flows and our up-to-date real estate investing information, tidbits, and tips there for you. All right, guys. Catch you on the next go around. Peace.